You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to a new episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast analysis of all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent for Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship. As we chat this Tuesday, we're just over a week removed from the Carmelo Anthony signing becoming official, so there are a lot of layers to sort through as the Rockets get ready for training camp starting in about a month. One of those layers, for obvious reasons, is the analytics factor. As with any player added to the Rockets under Daryl Morey, we know analytics certainly had a lot to do with the signing and the potential role that is seen for Carmelo in Houston. So to expand more on those angles, I'm joined on today's show by Dr. Stephen Shea. He's the chair of mathematics at St. Anselm College, the author of multiple basketball books, including one titled Basketball Analytics Spatial Tracking, and a consultant for various NBA teams and players. He's also a regular participant in the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference, which Daryl Morey is the co-founder of. Steve, how's it going today?
It's going great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thrilled to have you on. Really enjoyed your article last week on your ShotTracker.com website. For those who haven't seen it, I did retweet it on my Twitter timeline, at Ben Dubose, and it's going to be on our LockedOnRockets.com homepage by the time you're listening to this podcast. It's titled Carmelo Anthony, Great Shooter, Bad Shots. And that's what we're going to be diving into over the next 20 minutes or so of this podcast. Now, if you want to go ahead and call that up, please do so that you have the data in front of you. That's probably going to be easier than just listening to us read through the data because there's a lot of numbers in that piece, some good, some not so much, regarding Carmelo's shot data and efficiency and all sorts of various locations and situations on the court. And again, we'll be talking about that throughout this podcast. Carmelo Anthony, Great Shooter, Bad Shots, the article at ShotTracker.com. But to lead off, I'm actually going to skip ahead to the last paragraph, which I'm going to read right now, because this, to me, gets to the real meat of the issue. Carmelo has always been a shot maker. He has elite offensive ability, but as the league has trended to better shot selection, Carmelo hasn't adjusted. If any team can right this ship, it's Houston, and if they do, Carmelo will return to being one of the NBA's elite offensive players, and Houston might have enough to overtake the Warriors and reach the NBA Finals. For a 34-year-old Carmelo Anthony, this is me talking, in year 16 in the NBA, someone who's largely been mocked by certain segments of NBA Twitter and the NBA fan community throughout the offseason, that's a pretty considerable upside scenario. Now, it doesn't guarantee that he is going to reach that upside scenario, but the fact that it's there, it's pretty tantalizing for me to read that. And of course, there's lots of ifs that go into that. But if you could, Steve, just explain the nuts and bolts of why you can see such an upside scenario panning out for Carmelo Anthony, basically a veteran minimum signing for the Rockets.
Right. So, I mean, he is a veteran minimum signing, but it's accurate. I feel like it's a bit misleading to classify him as that. Obviously, he was under contract. Oklahoma City didn't want him, sent him through Atlanta, released. I think if he were a free agent, even though we've seen the criticisms of what he's done recently in his game and some of the defensive limitations, he's going to get more than, I think, $2.5 million. I think it was an unusual circumstance where he already had that money.
Yeah.
He wanted to go to a contender, and Houston was high on his list. And I also think that given his age, there would have been plenty of organizations that wouldn't have cared to bring him in because it wouldn't have put them over the top and made him competitive. So I don't know. I just say that as a qualifier because I don't think he's a $2.5 million player or anything like that. I think he's better than that. So maybe to frame the conversation, let me say that I think players have skill or offensive ability. We talk about Carmelo Anthony. We can say, can he make this shot? Can he make that pass? But then players also have a value, and where skill is something I think of as intrinsic, it's something true to the player that can move from team to team. And although it may deteriorate with age, you know, it's fairly consistent year to year, whereas value is going to be dependent on extrinsic factors. And that's their, of course, skill and intrinsic factors as well. But but also how the players used their context, their teammates, the system they're playing in. And when it comes to Carmelo Anthony, over the last 5 years, I would say that the difference, in my estimation, the difference in his skill as compared to his value has been the greatest of any player in the NBA. I think he has far more talent than he's provided in terms of value to his teams. And so for me, I find it frustrating. It's frustrating to watch because I see a player in him that I think is great. And we had evidence of that. If you go back to 2012-13, of course, he's 28 years old then. He took over six three-point attempts a game, 6.2. That was a career peak while shooting 38%. He took near eight free throw attempts a game. That wasn't his career high, but it's been the highest since, and shot 83% there. And, you know, the combination of which showing that he was heading in the right direction in terms of taking a higher volume of three-point attempts, while at the same time still being as aggressive an offensive player, trying to get to the hoop, get to the free throw line, which is an even more efficient shot than the three-pointer. And, of course, that 2012-13 Knicks team was very good.
Yep.
It was the last time they were good. And so here you had this player, he hit 28, you felt like he had matured, he had learned, he was growing with the NBA, everything was headed in the right direction. They seemed to have the right system around him to start to get more out of him. But since then, I mean, these subsequent 5 years, he seems to have regressed. And again, I don't think it's so much an ability. His shooting percentages have fluctuated a bit, but he can still make shots. He still typically shoots over 40% on catch and shoot threes, things of that nature. It's really the shot selection and usage. So what I find so enticing about this move to Houston and why I see so much potential is when it comes to how Carmelo was used, he came from two systems, the system in New York, I'll say under Phil Jackson, even though he wasn't the coach because he was pushing the triangle offense there. Mm. And then the system he played in Oklahoma City, and although they're improving, they're still doing things that wouldn't agree with what the analytics suggest they should be doing in terms of optimizing their players and optimizing their shot selection. So, you know, when I see him coming out of those systems, there's a part of me that believes that at least some of what was happening in terms of Carmelo's shot selection was a result of the systems he played for. It was a result of the teammates he was with, the coaches, and what they were choosing to do. And so if you take that player and now put him in Houston, which has arguably the best shot selection in the NBA, they're as progressive as anybody. They think the most, it seems, in terms of getting players in the position to succeed, getting players to take their most efficient shots the most often. I see potential to take a player, Carmelo, who's always made the shots, and now have him take the right shots. And when you put the two together, all you have to do is look at what he shoots at the various shots and then try to project out which shots he'll take. And the math comes out that he'll be good.
One of the things that really intrigues me with this concept is that it matches everything that I've seen with the so-called eye test as well. I've watched a lot of film on Carmelo in Oklahoma City this past year. I don't really want to bias myself to the New York Carmelo or especially Denver Carmelo because at 34 years old, he certainly doesn't have the explosion he once had. But in Oklahoma City, one of the things that amazes me watching the film, you can see he doesn't really get as much separation or lift as he used to on his jump shots. And yet, despite the lack of separation, despite the inefficiencies, he still actually shot above 40% from the field, which shows you that somewhere in there, there's still an elite shooter, an elite shot maker, because even as the degree of difficulty has increased, while his percentages have fallen off a little, it hasn't been anything drastic, and that's because of how elite a shooter he still is. And to your point, and the numbers, you look at the points per shot. Now, 0.95, which is what he is for the year, that's not particularly good, and that reflects not just taking bad shots, but inefficient ones, such as 39% in the mid-range. But when you look at him used in the right context, on catch-and-shoot threes, he averaged 1.12 points per shot. That would rank 19th in the NBA. On wide-open threes, he averaged 1.27 points per shot, which is excellent. So to me, that matches, you know, your data with the eye test, which is that, wow, if you can get him the right shots, then there's still an elite shooter in there. And, you know, it's frustrating because you would like to think that a player would figure this out on his own, but maybe it takes the perfect marriage of player and system. And I guess what I want to ask you about now, Steve, is transitioning to getting a player to buy in. Because a lot of this discussion with Carmelo and the Rockets has been framed around the concept of role. And I've seen a lot of arguments. You understand why making him the focal point, those bench units, maybe even coming off the bench when James Harden isn't in the game, you can make him happy. You can run your offense through him at times. And I see the merits in that. But the flip side that I wonder about is, do you also want to play him a lot with James Harden and Chris Paul so that you can build the proper habits, i.e. get him to buy in to taking more catch-and-shoot threes, more wide-open threes, more ideal usage? Just curious your thoughts on that and the idea of how you convince a 34-year-old Carmelo Anthony to buy into the proper habits that he needs to maximize his skill set.
Right, yeah, that's a million-dollar question. Will he buy in? We know that Houston's going to propose something that would be efficient for him, but to what extent will he buy in? And I think that's going to tell us how much of the poor usage and shot selection of the last couple of years was Carmelo and how much of it was the system he was in. And so I find that intriguing. But I like both ideas. I like the idea of playing Carmelo alongside a James Harden and Chris Paul, or at least one of them. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea of letting him run a little bit with a second unit. So obviously there are points in the game, in an NBA game. We typically see this in the second quarter where teams will put out their second units. You don't have the best basketball on both sides. And I think that's an opportunity for a player like Carmelo, who, as you suggested, he's not as explosive as he used to be. In my head, I'm picturing actually Paul Pierce in his later years and how he had to transition his game a little bit. Transitioned from really a small forward to a power forward, and had to be a little bit more savvy in how to get a decent shot because he couldn't rely on pure athleticism. But so Carmelo's in that mold, and I think if you let him run against some second units, he can have some success there. I don't think he won't be particularly efficient, but I think he'll be okay for second unit standards in the NBA. And at the same time, that could be enough to appease Carmelo, to get him to buy in.
Okay.
If he does have that opportunity to create at times. But if you look at the numbers for each of the last four seasons, Carmelo's been a below 30% three-point shooter on pull-up threes, for example. We've seen his free throw attempts trending down. I think I mentioned he was taking still seven, almost eight free throw attempts a game back in 2012-13. He's down to just over two last season, which is telling me he doesn't want to go at the hoop consistently. He doesn't want to take that kind of beating. He can't elevate the same extent that he used to. So when you look at the numbers, that's the negative. On the positive side, I had already mentioned, they're still a very good catch-and-shoot three-point shooter. He's a good corner shooter. It's a small sample. Last year, I think he was down a little bit. He shot 34% on corner threes last year, 19 for 56. But the year before, he was 43%, 20 for 47. I think that's probably more in line with what you would get from him as an off-the-ball corner option in Houston. You know, when you look at the things that he still does very well, it strongly suggests that he'll be the most efficient if he can play off the ball and feed off of Harden or off of Chris Paul and get those looks.
Speaking of Chris Paul, he's obviously a case study, a positive one that you could draw on if you're the Rockets with this Carmelo Anthony. You referenced the data from Chris Paul in your ShotTracker.com article. 41% of his shots were from mid-range in Chris Paul's last year with the Clippers. That was cut almost in half to 23% in CP's first year with the Rockets. And, of course, Chris Paul, Carmelo Anthony, very good friends. That's one of the cases for optimism that you could mount in terms of getting Carmelo to buy in, that buy-in that we've been talking about really this entire show. I'm curious your thoughts on the Rockets organizationally and their ability to get players, be it Chris Paul, be it Carmelo Anthony, whoever it is, to buy in to these concepts more than other teams. Because, you know, while this data is great, at the same time, it's 2018, it's not secret, this stuff is out there, every team uses analytics to some degree, But yet the Rockets are the only team that has gone this far and had this much success in terms of efficiency up and down the roster, at least to this point. We'll see what happens with Carmelo Anthony in terms of players adopting those principles. And I'm just curious why you think that is. The one thing that I can point to, the Rockets from GM and Daryl Morey, coach Mike D'Antoni, star player James Harden, they feel more linear in that all three of those guys embrace the concepts. It's not like you just have one or two in leadership positions that buy in and the others don't. But just generally speaking, and I know a lot of the numbers bear it out, the Rockets have adopted these philosophies much more than other NBA teams. So certainly you hope that plays out if you're a Rockets fan with Carmelo Anthony. But I'm just curious, since you know follow the league as a whole, I know you consult with lots of teams and players, just your thoughts on why the Rockets have had more success with this than other teams, including, quite frankly, other teams that Carmelo Anthony has been on.
So you mentioned that it seems as though the front office, Daryl Morey, Mike D'Antoni, and their star player, James Harden, are in agreement, or largely in agreement of how they want to play. And that's a big piece of it. When Houston brought in Mike D'Antoni, to me, it was the first time in the NBA we've seen an organization that was heavily influenced by analytics hire a coach that really well suited how they wanted to play, and that I want to say progress, but I mean an analytics infused system. It was the first time we actually paired the two, at least in Philadelphia side, because they may have been doing that, but they were for a few years in a state where they weren't trying to win. Mm-hmm. But in Houston, it really felt like that was the first time it happened. And it was noticeable to me because working in analytics, you often get the question, well, what is analytics one? And, you know, and they'll point to other sports like Oakland and the Oakland Athletics and Major League Baseball. Well, they never actually won. And sometimes the counter to that is, well, there were other teams that used analytics, like the Red Sox used analytics under Epstein when they won. But how do you quantify how much? And I think there's no denying that Houston as a team really values analytics. They brought it in. And I think there's no denying that when they went and got D'Antoni, they got him for a reason. They got him because his offensive system, his offensive belief very closely aligned with what they wanted. So I think that alone is a huge part of it. I'm entirely with you that having a star player on board is going to be a major part of convincing some of the other players to get on board. When I'm a Boston fan, and when Boston assembled their big three with Pierce, Garnett, and Allen, they had to get that whole roster to buy into playing a really good defensive system and had to work hard defensively. And there's no doubt that having a guy like Kevin Garnett in that locker room was a big part of getting some of the younger players on that roster invested and having them focus consistently. So yeah, I do think that's a big part of it. Now, I'll say, I don't know that Houston's been successful with all of the players they've brought in. I think it wasn't a perfect marriage with Dwight Howard.
Right.
I think Dwight Howard, you know, I'm sure Houston behind the scenes was seeing things like, you know, Dwight Howard shouldn't post up as much as he is. That's not the go-to option. We want to get him moving, get him out of the paint. Even like they use Capella a lot now, where he's coming to the perimeter, he's setting a screen, he's rolling. We're going to get, you know, they probably had the conversations. We want to get you the ball while you're moving downhill, not with your back to the basket. And it didn't seem to work out. Dwight Howard seemed frustrated by that. In the same way he seemed frustrated with his usage with the Lakers, and maybe even subsequently with some of the other teams he's bounced around to now. So I don't know. They don't have a perfect record, but certainly the things you mentioned, having a Harden, D'Antoni in that front office aligned, is helping them do, I think, better than most of the other teams.
Yeah, they certainly don't have a perfect record. It just feels like they're doing better than a lot of other teams conceptually at this.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Steve, last point I want to get to, and this is more about you personally. I know you didn't grow up in a traditional basketball background in terms of your work and how you've gotten to where you are today. Just for those of us listening on the podcast, anyone who's has an interest in analytics, grew up around the game, but not necessarily from a playing standpoint. And of course, with you, you have a very strong academic background in terms of math, now chair of mathematics at St. Anselm College. Just explain how you, over the past 10 years or so, have sort of morphed into this role to where you are pretty active on the sports analytics side of things. and how someone could potentially replicate that if they had that sort of interest to get in philosophically on the basketball analytics side of things.
Sure. So sports analytics is a really amazing field in that it brings so many different areas together. There are elements of psychology in it, and economics, physics, and of course, sport knowledge and understanding. And it really works best when you can get a group that collaborates and has that collection of knowledge. So one of the things I always tell people is, it's not essential that you have a really strong stat or math background. It's not essential that, you have a really strong understanding of economics, or it's not essential that you're a great coder or programmer, that you could build databases, et cetera. You want to play to whatever your strength is and then meet analytics and contribute to it from that area. So I would say that first. Now, from my story in particular, as I look back, it feels almost obvious that I would somehow find my way in this field, although sports analytics was not something discussed when I grew up. But I did the things that you would expect. One, I was heavily involved in sports growing up. It was a big part of my life. And I was heavily involved in math activities, and I put the two together in the avenues that were available. I did fantasy sports from a very young age. Me and my buddies would get together, and we'd try to figure out the simulators on video games, some of the earliest video games, sports video games, things of that nature. So, we were challenging our mind to think as best we could, down the path that would have led me to this career, even though I didn't know it existed at the time. I would say, to be as brief as I can, if someone's out there that's interested, regardless where they're coming from, they should recognize what their strength is and then do their best to be to have an awareness of a basic level of understanding of some of the other things that are contributing to sports analytics, and then to just get their hands dirty to try to do something. I think that the public basketball analytics community is very welcoming in terms of if you can get into the social media circles, for example, on Twitter, those that do this kind of thing. I think there are always regular opportunities to contribute if you found something, whether that's contributing on a known basketball analytics site. I can say like a Nylon Calculus, give them a shout out. If you Google them, there's if you do something good, I think there's always opportunities to put something out there or to start your own blog. However you can sort of disseminate your information. I would say get your, try something, get your hands dirty, and no one expects that the first thing you do is going to be outstanding, but if it gets you going, you're learning, you're part of the conversation. I've seen many sort of start there, and I think very quickly go from, an unknown in this industry to someone who's doing, fantastic work, and I've seen individuals go all the way to finding jobs. Whether that's in a supporting tech company or with a team. And again, from a variety of backgrounds, too. I really want to emphasize that.
Yep, absolutely. That's part of why I want to get your take on this, because I know your story is pretty relatable from that regard. Steve, thanks so much for the time. Folks, if you want to follow him on Twitter, you can do so at SteveShea33. You can also read his articles at ShotTracker.com, including the one we referenced today, which is Carmelo Anthony, Great Shooter, Bad Shots. Steve, thanks so much for the time, and I would love to talk again sometime.
All right, thank you.
Again, that's Stephen Shea. He is the chair of mathematics at St. Anselm College, but a great follow in the NBA analytics community. He does some consulting work with both NBA teams and players, and hopefully he is right in his positive assessment of the upside potential with Carmelo Anthony. One final point I want to get to before we close out. We heard at James Harden's charity weekend, the basketball game on Sunday night, in which several Rockets participated in, James Harden, Gerald Green, who hit the game-winning three, P.J. Tucker, played with Russell Westbrook on that team as well. A lot of fun over at TSU. But the real news that came out of it after it was that the Rockets, as they did a year ago, would be going to the Bahamas in early September for a week, essentially a training camp before the training camp, so they are more ready to go in mid to late September once training camp officially opens. And a big part of it, of course, is they want to integrate the new pieces who were not with them last year, most notably Carmelo Anthony and James Ennis. So nothing is guaranteed, but when it comes to getting that buy-in from Carmelo Anthony that Steve referred to, and really we've all referred to ever since it became obvious over a month ago that the Rockets and Carmelo were going down this path, then getting him before training camp, getting him to the Bahamas for a week to buy into the system, the concepts, that's a big difference that the Rockets have, even relative to Oklahoma City a year ago when the Thunder consummated that deal just a day before media day. And essentially, as I've said, it was like a shotgun wedding in terms of the marriage of Carmelo's ideas to the Thunder's, and there wasn't much time to work in conceptually how he should be used versus how traditionally he has been used. The Rockets do have the benefit of that time, and now, as we've seen by the plans linking them to the Bahamas in early September, they are fully going to take advantage of that time even before training camp, and kudos to James Harden and the Rockets leadership for doing just that. So with that, we'll wrap up today's show. As always, thanks to you guys for listening. If you want more content before the next show, the best place to get it is always on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. Again, if you want to follow today's guest, Steve Shea, you can do so at SteveShea33 on Twitter. Also, beyond Twitter, if you want to reach out to me for any reason, questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this podcast better, well, you can do that at LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. We've also got a website, LockedOnRockets.com, a Facebook account at Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, Twitter account at Locked On Rockets. All of those are great ways to access our content, ask me questions, etc., etc. Also, if you have not subscribed to us already, please do. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, TuneIn, etc., etc. Wherever you listen to your podcast, you can probably find us because we're part of a great network of shows across the NBA, NFL, and even some MLB and college sports across this Locked On Podcast Network. You can find us at any of those platforms. And if you'd be kind enough to leave us a 5-star review and subscribe, that's how, A, you'll be able to get episodes right when they come out, and B, if you leave that 5-star review, that's how we remain financially viable to our advertisers and our sponsors and keep this thing going as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Also, final plug, I mentioned the shows across the NFL and other sports. That includes Locked On Texans. The Texans are in full swing, 2-0 in the preseason. The third preseason game this weekend against the LA Rams. The third preseason game is the one where in the NFL, starters play the most, at least a half, and sometimes close to three quarters. So you should get a real look at Deshaun Watson, J.J. Watt, etc. this weekend. The Texans look good. There's a lot of optimism. If you want more on them as their season progresses, we're just under 3 weeks from the season beginning, I believe. The regular season, that is. Well, you can get that from Robert Land and Brian Patterson, my friends over at Locked On Texans. They do a great job providing excellent daily Houston Texans content. So this is where we'll leave off for today. Once again, thanks to Steve Shea, analytics consultant, for joining us. Thanks to all of you for listening. And stay tuned, because we'll be back again before the end of the week to talk more Houston Rockets right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast discussion of all things Houston Rockets basketball.